Hi, I'm Brennan Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Agustin Gonzalez, OD, FAAO, Clinic Director of Eye and Vision in Richardson, Texas. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Puerto Rico, actually born in Cuba during the Castro Revolution. Mm-hmm. My parents exiled to Spain, ended up in Florida, but I actually grew up most of my life in Puerto Rico. I attended from third grade until completing high school in Puerto Rico.
How did you get into optometry?
Wow, that is a long story. There are two versions of this. They're both partially true, which is the amazing thing. When I was undecided, I wanted to do a PhD in marine genetics. And it was during the Reagan years, and budget cuts were slashing a lot of research programs. So I decided to go back to Puerto Rico. I was studying in Florida at the time. I decided to go back to Puerto Rico. And I applied to dental school and applied to optometry school. And what I did is I got accepted to both programs, and I did not know which program to choose. So what I ended up doing is I ended up driving and seeing the house for the president of the dental society and the house for the president of the optometric society. And the bigger house was the optometrist house. And that's a true story. The other story is I was dating this one girl whose friend was going into optometry, and I also became interested. As I was doing my real estate research, I became interested in optometry, and it actually ended up studying optometry because of that influence. So it's a twisted turn of events. Besides, I was always nearsighted as a little kid, and my mom took me to an ophthalmologist who actually had a Cuban optometrist mm-hmm. working with him. So, you know, it wasn't like optometry was a foreign thing, but there was a lot of twists and turns for me to get to where I am.
Why did you pursue the academic side of optometry?
You know, I've always been interested in creating impact in other people's lives. And I think that academia is a phenomenal way of not only sharing your knowledge, but also creating a foundation to be an influence in other people. And I think that was a very honorable thing. I had experience teaching when I was in college as a teaching assistant, and I always enjoyed that. I always enjoyed the camaraderie that you develop with the students. I always enjoyed the fact that you can become a mentor and become a sort of a person of influence for other people. And I think it's a very noble cause. I think it's a very noble endeavor. And I look forward, once my kids graduate from college, and I look forward to someday going back into academia, although I still am involved in academia. And a young professor with the School of Optometry, and seeing students, you know, having students in my office, I enjoy the academic settings. I think that there's a certain camaraderie, and there's a certain magic to being a mentor that leaves a long-lasting legacy.
At one point, you became interested in the physiology in owls. How did you become interested in the vision of owls?
Oh, it's a long story. When I was in first year of optometry school, one of the Cornell professors came to visit the school, and one of my professors at the time was good friends with him, and they studied not only the physiology of the owls, but they also studied the refractive aspects of the owl's eyes, and that fascinated me because, you know, the eye is such a simple yet complex organ. It's simple in the way it works, but it's actually very complex in the way things have to happen for it to work. That I became very interested in that. But back then, it was a big thing for me.
Are you still fascinated by owls?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Well, my sister collects owls, you know. Yeah, collects a little figure.
Oh, okay. What brought you to Texas from Puerto Rico?
Wow, that's another long story. I became Dean of Clinical Affairs of Puerto Rico at a very young age, and I didn't have the human resource skills to have that position. And I did a number of changes in the school, and basically I became stressed out with the job, so I decided to take a year off and come to Texas. I had a Texas license at the time. My wife's sister was living here. Interestingly, once we moved in, 6 months later, they ended up moving out to Florida. But at the time, we thought we'd be here, and it's been 21 years since I've mm-hmm. 20 years since I've been here.
You've done a bit of everything. You've worked in academia, clinical research, managed optometric retail operations, and a marketing consultant. How did you decide on going into private practice?
It's a very common story. You know, at a moment in time, I was managing a number of Pearle Vision optical optometry offices here in the Dallas area. And as with anything in retail, and you are the poster child of how they do things right, and then you become the poster child of part of the problem of not doing things the way they wanted. So pressure mounted for me to get rid of the operations, which I did. And then at that moment in time, I said, you know, I'm going to move the largest operation. I moved it into a private practice. I ended up doing a number of surveys and questionnaires to my patient population in order to see which would be the most effective transition mm-hmm. from commercial to private practice. And it ended up paying dividends. There was a moment there at year number two where you're the amount of commercial practice patients starts dwindling down because your prices are going up, but the amount of private patients starts going up because the quality of services that you're delivering. But yeah, that happened 10 years ago, never looked back.
What sparked your interest in generic meds?
A long time ago, when generic Tobradex hit the market, I understood that it wasn't as effective as brand name Tobradex. And so I started looking a little bit more closely into what made the products different. With the advent of Salatan, the same thing happened with glaucoma medications. And then with the price increases in medications that had happened in the last 5 years, you know, it's become a hot topic. The more I became involved in managing diseases of the eye, the more I realized that there's a big gap between outcomes and using the right medication.
Mm-hmm.
That actually got me interested not only in the generic and brand medications, but also started getting me interested more in the biochemistry and the molecular pharmacology of a lot of medications. If there's something that I tell all my students is that just because a drug is labeled by the FDA to be in a category, for example, antihistamines, you know, we have a number of antihistamines in the market for eye care, doesn't mean that they all work the same. We have to find the unique properties in that molecule or the unique properties in the formulation that are better suited for a particular patient, and that's going to improve your clinical outcomes, you know. I talk with a lot of optometrists, and sometimes they get frustrated or managing a disease, and then they think it's their clinical skills, when in essence, it's their knowledge base of pharmacology. We all have great backgrounds in pharmacology. We take more pharmacology hours than the MDs. But the reality is, if we do not discern in how to properly use a medication, it becomes very difficult to attain the desired outcome. I do a number of lectures on the difference between brands and generics. I've written a number of articles and even how generics contribute to bacterial resistance.
What keeps you involved in clinical research?
Curiosity. There's nothing better than learn something new every day. The older I get, the more I appreciate learning things and discovering things. And clinical research is a way of having your ear to the ground on things that are new and coming, and having a good grip of what's going on clinically. So Yes, it's curiosity, you know, the quest for learning something new.
What do you do for downtime?
What do I do for downtime? I used to play golf. I'm no longer playing golf. I used to play tennis years before that. The one thing that I enjoy doing that relaxes me is I am a Dallas Symphony Orchestra season ticket holder, and I've done that for 7 years. And I've been a Dallas Opera season ticket holder also for about 12 years. I enjoy the symphony, I enjoy the opera, I enjoy museums.
What's your favorite opera?
My favorite opera, you know, there's so many. There's a, okay, as a professional, there's a, an opera called Iolanta, Iolanta, and it's about a blind princess. So that's the one that resonates as a professional. Personally, my first opera was Rigoletto, and I saw it in Verona. I also saw Romeo and Juliet at the Arena in Verona. You know, I guess because I've seen Rigoletto probably, I don't know, 7 times. Rigoletto would be my most commonly seen. I'm actually planning on seeing Rigoletto in Santa Fe, New Mexico in August. La Traviata, I love that score, and typically every time I see it, you know, I'm never disappointed. And so those are probably it. As a professional, Yolanda, because it talks about blindness, Rigoletto and La Traviata.
Do you have any regrets?
Yes, I should have started private practice sooner. That's one regret. I've been in optometrist now for 28 years, and I've been in private practice for 10 of those years. But on the other hand, if I didn't go through the cycle of going through the commercial practice or having worked in a hospital environment, you know, there's a lot of things that I would not be doing nowadays. So I think that you know, I think I've had a good path. I think I've had a good grip on different modes of practice. I think that I am at the moment in time where I should be. I'm very comfortable with the way I practice. I'm very comfortable with the things that I'm doing, and so do I have any regrets? No, not really. Really not.
Now, I know that you're involved a lot in social media and promoting how ODs can promote their practice. So
yes.
What's one piece of social media advice that you have for ODs working to promote their practice?
You need to get involved and you need to learn. You need to learn how it's done. You need to learn the nuts and bolts. Delegating social media is so personalized that delegating social media to another person, it's actually very inefficient. In order for social media to work, you need to understand what your needs are, and you need to understand how to voice that to your patient population. Because, for example, my office has a unique set of propositions that are a little bit non-traditional from other optometry offices. So being able to voice that you're the expert in this particular part of optometry or this particular part of eye care is much more effective than just spending money using social media and delegating to somebody else.
What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
I have kids. The craziest thing that I've ever done, that I can recall, I guess. The craziest thing I've ever done. Okay, here we go. When I was in college, we used to cave dive in sinkholes in Florida to collect albino crawfish. So we would go down about 120, 110 feet below sea level, diving for these little boogers to collect for research at the college that I was in. I think that's probably the craziest. Looking back, that's definitely the craziest thing I've ever done. You know, I grew up in Puerto Rico, and I grew up diving, and at the time we didn't need any certification or anything. I think that's probably the most dangerous thing I've done, because I wasn't certified in cave diving. I wasn't even certified in diving. That's probably been the most risky thing I did. That happened 35 years ago. The more recent, you know, I went zip lining in Puerto Rico to one of the fastest zip lines in the world, and that happened, or the longest zip line in the world, and it's called Toro Verde, or Green Bull, and that happened in just January. So, you know, for a guy who's not seeking adventure, I enjoy tipping my hat every once in a while.
Okay. Augustin, that's all the questions I have for you. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Bruno, thank you so very much, man. Hey, have a great day.